Hi, welcome to this week's More Than a Club, and we're going semi-local for the first time because we're staying within Scotland in a legendary Celtic supporters club, the Heriot Watt and Edinburgh University's CSC. I'll tell you, see, when you're doing the programme notes and having to write all that out, look at that was murder in the Celtic view. You know, I was glad when you went for the kind of, would you call it an acronym?
An acronym.
But it was one. Like much easier to write HWEUCSC. Even then, mind you, it's still, you know, no, you still have to think about it. And
we just say that the end phrase is whoosh. Just say whoosh.
Whoosh. All right.
Whoosh.
Which is quite, and we've got Paul Riley with us. I should have said that, but whoosh is quite, it's quite appropriate because obviously you had quite a lot of dealings, or seemed to have, from what you've been telling me, with Archie McPherson when he was director of Edinburgh University. And obviously his catch, whoosh, swept away.
Forgot about that, actually.
Yeah. It's very appropriate. So, I mean, it's like, your CSC is one that I've got just an enormous fondness for. We'll go on to that later. But look, welcome to the show, Paul. It's great to have you on.
Pleasure. Good to be here, Andrew. Thank you. Thanks for asking us.
No, it's brilliant. And your claim to fame, again, opposite for being on the Celtic Underground, which is the longest running fan football podcast in the world, is the fact that you are a whoosh as the longest continuously running university's Celtic supporters club.
We are indeed, Andrew. I'm sure at this point any of your colleagues in the Glasgow University Celtic supporters club might bristle there, but they don't have an unbroken history, so that's where they were our mentors when we started.
They don't have an unbroken history, and again, which is something we'll go on to talk about, but it's quite appropriate that there's a line you could use for this is facts are chills that Winnie Ding, as Robert Burns said, which is quite appropriate.
Yeah.
Which is quite appropriate because your claim to fame is the Tommy Burns Supper, really, isn't it?
We like to say it's the original and best. Don't be taken in by current imitations. We came up with the idea first. Tommy endorsed our idea first. 1986 was the first one we did. So I've now done 27 of them. And we've got another one next year, actually. So it's been the Young Turks in the club of reinvigorated it a bit, you know, so it's back on the scene again.
Brilliant. So you started in 1984. Do you want to give us a wee bit of background to
you? Aye. So I founded the club in 84. Me and still a very good friend of mine, another Paul from County Tyrone, Strabane, the Badlands of West Tyrone. And Paul and me were at the same, we met in the same class on the very first day. I was only 16 for a great institution. I think you might have been the same institution as me, Andrew, Holy Cross in Hamilton. And me and Paul, the very first day, we went and got a game of snooker after our classes, and it turned out we were both, you know, you're sort of just checking in with each other. I think he might be a Celtic. He might be on the right side. It turned out Paul was a Celtic supporter as well. So that was 83. We actually started at uni, but we ran our first bus February 84 to the League Cup semi-final in Pittodrie. And we sort of rather cheekily got in touch with the Celtic Supporters Association. The old secretary then was a guy called George Delaney and said, we're starting up this club. And he was just totally delighted that there were students wanting to start up a Celtic support. He must have thought starting up a student CSC would add some gravitas to them or something. So we got tickets, 57 tickets, sold them all, ran a bus to Aberdeen. The rest is history. We won 1-0 in that game. Second leg, we drew nothing each. We get beaten in the final, right enough. Another controversial goal, of course. But that was the club started at that point. First bus. We ran it. We had a meeting maybe 3 weeks later. Had a good debate about the name of the club. There was various names were suggested. James Connolly, of course, the Edinburgh link. Mary Queen of Scots. That's a story in itself. We're going to call ourselves. But thankfully, we stuck to the simple trade name of, as you say, Whoosh. One would argue that the reason, in case people wonder, well, why is it Heriot Watt? Because that's the smaller of the two unis. It was just because we were at Heriot Watt. We weren't going to allow them to have their name first, you know. friendly intra-club rivalry. And that was it. So we've been going ever since.
And how did yous get on in the sense that it was Heriot Watt and it was Edinburgh? Was there any kind of, was there rivalry or was there, did yous come together? Did you, you must have had to reach out to Edinburgh, take it then, from your Heriot Watt?
Yeah. We did. I mean, the first bus, it was very much we ran it from Heriot Watt, but the difference between both people at the universities, but Edinburgh, it's a bigger university.
Yeah.
It's got a wider range of subjects. Heriot Watt's, it was a younger upstart. It's a lot more vocational courses, you know, and over the years, the majority of members are probably at actually Edinburgh, just because of the sizes, you know. We've got a lot of members now from Napier as well, Queen Margaret University, that used to be a college. Funnily enough, me and Paul were at the Art College, which was a great place to be, Edinburgh College of Art, and over the years, we've had a lot of Edinburgh College of Art. So a real good mixture, Andrew, of folk from all over the academia, yeah, or its underbelly in Edinburgh.
Saw a few great gigs at Teviot Row, I remember, back in the 80s.
Teviot, yeah. We're looking forward, I mean, back to the supper for a second. Teviot's been getting refurbished, multi-million to say. So we've not been there for having a supper or anything there for, it's probably about 5 years now. So next year's, which is in January, the traditional Burns time, of course, that's, we'll see the new venues. We're looking forward to seeing that, you know. It's, I think you've been at one, Andrew, haven't you,
I've been to a few. I mean, what a genius idea. I mean, Tommy was my childhood hero. It wasn't always easy when he was manager, but he was under so much pressure, but he was my childhood hero. But what a genius idea. You're only kind of finding your feet within those 2 years, and then you come up with this kind of inspirational kind of, because it did give you a name.
It did. Aye. I mean, it was, but the idea was sparked literally, but not literally. I'm terrible for using that. You always make sure you don't use the word.
I'm not like literally.
Negatively, is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
There's a late night Edinburgh drinking institution at any Edinburgh college listeners, viewers would have heard of, called Sneaky Pete's, which is a very late night place for denizens of Edinburgh. We used to go there quite a lot. We had a meeting one night. It was just a committee meeting. So we'd retired down there about 1 a.m. And there was a bunch of Tory students were in there. So this was about 85. And they were just being Tory students. And there was a few.
They were going to Edinburgh.
Sorry. Aye, exactly. There wasn't any Heriot Watt amongst them. And we had a wee bit of tension, a bit of scuffle, actually. Now, I would add at that point, I was working in Sneaky Pete's at that point, so we were able to get away with it. But, and we, you know, once that all calmed down, we say, right, why? And it turns out they had just come from a burn supper. And we says, right, we're not having that. We can't have that. So we got in touch with Tommy, and Tommy was great with us over the years, absolutely. I've got so many stories about Tommy's involvement with the supper. Came to everyone except for the one when he became, maybe he was manager of Reading for a year. Yeah. When he was manager of Reading, there was a year in the supper that he was unable to make it. But every year he supported us, and Tommy would get us guests and stuff, you know. So when we got to 2008, of course, and Tommy passing, you know, it was very sad that we had the supper all set up. And Tommy, I can still remember the call Tommy made to me to say he wasn't going to be able to make it. But then we had another one after Tommy's passing. Rosemary, his wife, came along, and we had a lot of, I don't know if that was one you were at, Andrew, but that was a very, very poignant event, that one. But it was quite deliberately, Tommy's family were fully, they were really keen and we did it, you know, to mark with Tommy's passing and the fact he had such a long history with the supper. So he must have done, how many is that? He was well over, maybe 20 odds. We've reached 28, it'll be next year. So, yeah, and Tommy was great with us. Lovely man to know. I'm privileged. Same as you, he was a hero of mine, Andrew, when I was wee. So to be actually speaking to the guy all the time, and he used to call me wee man, even though I was,
aye,
wee man. I've got you, and I've got you, Chicken George. You know, and I've got you, I've got you, see. You know, he was almost like an agent for the supper, and he just, that's how Tommy was, you know, and he loved it. He would come along, always drink a glass of milk at the supper. He would sit, you know, I was the MC, and he would sit beside me, and he was just growing. Of course, the Mac the Knife, his trademark, he he started with us, and his line always was, "Quiet, I can feel a song coming on." And he would do that to the end of the night, just so, yeah. It's a privilege to know him and to allow us to do that. And after Tommy passed, his family been very happy to stay associated with us, you know, in the supper and so on. We're very lucky.
He was good at Mac the Knife. I was at a couple, like, he had a brilliant, that kind of Bobby Darin rasp, didn't he? He kind of... That was a kind of Bobby Darin kind of rendition, if people know the different ones, because it wasn't like Sinatra's or anything. It was more like,
it was his own.
Yeah.
And that was the one I knew, funnily enough, as well. So when he sung it, and it was just the wee bits he put into it are the exact same as the Darin version, you know, but he'd have the whole place in the palm of his hands, you know, and you'd get, I can still remember some of the early ones, people like, I can name so many players, you know, Grant, even Caesar himself, they'd never seen them. They were just watching, they're all going, is that? That Tommy Burns singing. It's now become a bit more ubiquitous, hasn't it? Everyone's probably associates Tommy singing Mac the Knife, but we were sure, if I could feel a song coming on. That's a Celtic great Tommy Burns singing Mac the Knife to a bunch of drunks, basically, you know, and it was 3 years. We'll be very lucky, loads of guests, and it is the Haggis, Neeps and Tatties. We deliberately have set it up, Andrew's being... And it's great to hear anybody who's been at it. They always say, "Oh, you don't get a Celtic Supporters Club night like the Tommy Burns Supper." And even these imitations these days, it's a wee bit more just like your sportsman's dinner. Any time I'm speaking to a prospective guest, if they've no heard about the supper, most of them have, they'll say, "Tell us about it. Is it just a sportsman's dinner?" And I'll go, "Oh, no, no." I mean, I don't like that sportsman's dinner stuff, you know. Well, I was going to say all the ribald jokes and stuff, but we've had a few low points over the years of certain guests just telling jokes that probably the... I'm going to mention Pat Stanton, but I'm not going to mention the joke he told, but my goodness, that drew the oxygen from the room, the joke that Pat told when he came 1 year, you know. But we'll let
he's
that
a lovely
pass.
Man,
was,
Pat.
Exactly. And if he does ever hear about me saying this, he's probably going, "Oh, God, I do remember that joke I told. I misjudge my audience, shall we say, you know." And it's quite deliberate taking the mickey out ourselves a bit, and you get poetry, a bit of theatre, you know, we do skips on stage and a lot of music. We always have a band and stuff, and then speeches, of course, you know, so it's a good mix, and it's deliberately supposed to be a wee bit different. We never pay for a guest, that's the other thing I would say. I mean, that large fee that you've given me today, Andrew, for doing this, for example,
we'll put it in at the supper. Put it in at the supper. I'm sure you can, you can probably stage about 7 suppers with what we pay in Celtic Underground.
We'll pay for a haggis, a plate of haggis, maybe. Just for the record, this is all pro gratis. Is that the phrase? Pro gratis. Yeah.
I mean, one of the ones I was at, God rest his soul, just as well as God rest Tommy's soul. Kev McCara was there, and he's gave him a Union Jack bowler hat. We had a great picture that we used to have in the view office. And wee Kevin sitting there with a Union Jack bowler hat on. It was hilarious. It was an absolute hoot. I don't know if you remember that one.
Actually, I do. It's funny because that's another. You've just mentioned another feature that we do. We quite deliberately, every guest gets a really shitty. I'm allowed to say that. I don't know if I'm allowed to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good, right. A pretty awful gift. You know, we don't, no expenses spared, no expenses used on the gifts, you know, and we've had. So actually, Hugh McDonald's, who's done a few suppers now for a lovely man, Hugh, and he's great company. I don't know if you've had Hugh on.
I've had Hugh on, yep. Yeah, I know Hugh well.
Hugh's he's great. And we gave him, Hugh started writing, but he wrote briefly for the Daily Mail. And that was a mistake. So he's now proud to tell us. We gave him a big portrait of Thatcher, and he tells us he's still got that up in his bog, downstairs bog.
That board over it.
But that's the sort of crap that we give people. Billy McNeil, can I tell the Billy McNeil story?
Of course you can. That's where you're here.
One thing we did 1 year, we had both Caesar and Charlie Nicholas at the same one, you know. And both of them were pundits at that point in the telly. Yeah, I can't remember the game, but anyway, we raise money every year, you know, for causes as well. And we just give odd, but any money we raise, it goes straight to a couple of charities. And this year, we come up with the idea, with Billy and Charlie both been pundits on the telly, why don't we challenge them and say that we'll throw an extra, I think those days it was like £100 to the kitty, we'll take it for club funds. If both of these wear, and we gave both of them a tie. And we bought the separate ties, and we got them from Armstrong's, which is another Edinburgh institution. It's like a second-hand gentleman's outfitters, shall we say, you know, the old suits, and they've got these terrible old ties, you know, that old guys wear. I've got a few, actually, in my collection.
I've got hunters for my dad. The 70s, my daughter now wears, is a kind of chic, you know, that kind of, yeah.
It's chic. I think the word's irony, Andrew, rather than chic, if we're being honest, you know. Don't worry, I get that as well.
You say potato, I say potato. Like, you know.
But we gave both of them these terrible ties. And Billy sticks out in particular. And the reason it sticks out, because there was only Billy who'd actually fulfilled it. But Billy's tie, it was like this horrible brown and orange number with orange squares on. It was just a terrible tie. And we said, right, if you wear them in your next television appearance, we'll throw in extra money. And sure enough, poor Billy, it was about a fortnight later, he was on Sports Scene. And I'm saying, because we just thought they would do it, but sure enough, there's Billy sitting in the studio with us. And he'd obviously tried to find a suit. And he's sitting and he was like a mannequin, you know. He was obviously very self-conscious. And he's talking like that. But Charlie didn't. He was too vain to do it. But Billy didn't, bless him. And we've got a picture somewhere that we sometimes stick in our newsletter, and just to remind folks of the kind of humiliation that we were able to
inflict on a guest.
Great Celtic greats to indulge in. You know, I'm not proud of that moment, actually. Terrible. Anyway, it was good.
I mean, it's like, because you didn't do it for a few years, didn't you, know? Like, did that not go into abeyance for a few years?
Yeah, very much. We made a conscious, a deliberate decision after we did, as I said, we won 2009, and then we stopped. We just decided, no, we wrestled with it, but we stopped it. But I mean, maybe we talk later, Andrew. One thing about our club is there's a big throughput of members, you know, just because we had a lot of students, the committee changes, we had a lot of younger people coming along, and as you say, we're known for it. And so the younger members were keen on doing it again. So first thing we did was get in touch with Tommy's family, with Rosemary, bless her. And she said, oh, no, we'd be delighted if you want to start it again. And so we did. And they're not every year now. When Tommy was around, we did it every year. When Tommy was with us up until his death. So now we've reached, as I say, 27. The last big one, we were 40 years old 2 years ago now, and we had that's a joke in itself. We decided to push the boat out, and we had the number we usually have is 180, 200. The venue doesn't hold any more than that, but that works for us. But we pushed out, and we ended up so we went to 350. And that, but the only venue we could get was Murrayfield. Yes, the home of rugby, the home of oval balls. We had that in March 24 to mark our 40th year. That was huge, that one. But we're now coming back to our spiritual home, because that was just caused a lot of nervous breakdowns. The irony is we'd the most amazing list of guests, you know, for that, and we've been very lucky. Martin McCardy, who, for you know, a great Celtic supporter, who does a huge amount of stuff with, you know, actor and producer and everything, yes. You know. And Martin was utterly excited. I said to him, right, you've got a blank canvas, Martin, who can you get us? So we had Rose Riley, for example, who was she just had the whole place in the palm of her hand, a very emotional speech. We had just about half the cast of River City there doing wee sketches about Celtic. We had the Blessed Bernard, you know, Celtic supporters, student Celtic supporters clubs nights these days is not the same unless you have Bernard Ponsonby there telling us all about his you know, the tribulations on the board. We had Tosh McKinley, Peter Grant, and the list goes on. So that was a big one, and that was great. So anyway, Tommy, so we did stop them, but now we do it maybe every couple of years now, you know, just because it's a lot of work, actually, especially 2 weeks before it, you don't have any guests who have confirmed yet and all that shit, you know.
Tell me about getting guests when you've got nothing no poppy to pay.
Aye. I mean, you are scraping the barrel if you're getting me, if you don't mind me saying, Mr. Smith. But anyway,
The barrel has been scraped lower, may I tell you, the barrel has been scraped lower.
All right,
scraped lower touched. Every time they see me.
I know, I'm very touched.
But, I mean, for you, so you've been involved in the club for day one then, and are you still involved, or do you still, kind of week to week?
Yes and no, I'm just an old guy that sits at the back of the bus now, and, you know, occasionally flirts with the legal implications of having a wee plastic bottle in the bus with some juice in it or whatever. No, I don't. But I do help the guys at the supper, you know, because I'm lucky enough. Yeah, just our contacts and stuff we've built up over the years. So I'll help the boys get the supper sorted. But we've got a great committee. Yeah, it's a really good mix, gender-wise, background-wise, student, non-student. So we've got, at the moment, last year we had 150 members. Probably, I would say about 80% of them are either students or ex-students, you know.
Yeah.
So, and as I said, every year we're lucky. So coming round to the start of next year, we'll have all these freshers fairs, you know, with all the new students. You go, you have clubs and societies, and they try to encourage students to join them. So that usually brings in a fresh intake, fresh blood. But we're lucky with a great, great committee. A lot of people listening and are watching or listening. Nick Wood, I need to mention Nick's name. Nick is the understated and greatly appreciated ticket convener for the club, and he's done it for many years. Any Edinburgh Celtic supporters club will know Nick Wood. He's an amazing wee guy, totally unassuming. But if you wanted a ticket for Shanghai Wanderers versus Peking Rovers, Nick will get you a couple of tickets. He's that sort of guy. He just goes about his business. We did a wee presentation for Nick. I'll tell you what it was, actually. Some people may know, but the Taskmaster, you know, the Channel 4 show,
yeah,
Taskmaster.
Yeah, my daughter loves it.
Greg Davis, you know, there's the image of Greg and he sits in his big throne really like that, and then he tells all these celebrities all these things they need to do. So we get one of our very talented members, Colin Hughes, mention him as well, to do a mock-up of Taskmaster, and we got all the members, all the guests to sign this. Me and Nick's also get that in his toilet. So it really seems to be a toilet theme with the gifts that we give people. He's got that on his toilet.
It's to show humility. That.
So yeah.
Yeah.
So we're lucky, so to answer the question, no, I just go in the bus now. I've got a season ticket. Yeah, just sit in the back of the bus.
And then for your ticket convener, I was sacked as the ticket convener for your rivals, the Glasgow Uni Celtic Sports Club, because right. I was sitting one day and I thought, I'm sure there was something I was supposed to go up to the Celtic Sports Association about today. I'm sure there was. Can't even think what it is, and it's pissing down outside anyway. I'm sure there was. And then the next day came and it's like, fuck, that was the tickets for Ibrox. I forgot to pick up the tickets at Ibrox. I was 2 minutes walk along the road, you know, for the old Pools building, like up to the shit. And then, see, when I had to tell them in the beer bar, you know, you'll know the beer bar and all that.
Right.
I've got some bad news, guys. And it's like, poking like they're having to get held back for getting going for me and all this. What? I managed to beg about 8 tickets for Ibrox from working for the club and all that. We should have had 12. And I said, do you know, but for the bottom of my heart, I give you these. So I'm not going to go myself. My family are not going. And then, oh, do you expect us to be happy with that? Like, you're out.
No mercy. Our worst ticket convener story was years ago. So we're talking, it's when they started introducing tickets for games. So we're talking very early on in the club, and it was a Celtic Rangers game at Celtic Park. And we get 60 tickets for the old Celtic Park. And it was, I remember it was a Sunday game. But anyway, as anybody would, Celtic Rangers games, you imbibe a few before the game and stuff. The ticket convener and treasurer, who shall remain, I'll say their first names because this is the sort of stuff you really need, Keith and Colin. Essentially, we collected all the bus fares, and this is when you gave out the tickets in the bus. We gave out all the tickets in the bus, and let's just say they were a bit worse for wear. So we got back onto the bus, and Colin was sleeping, so we woke him up. You're right, Colin. And somebody said, have you got the money? And it was about 800 quid in those. It was a lot of money, you know, both bus fares and tickets. And he lost it. He just lost the whole lot and dropped it in the jungle or something. And so now that was a blow because we paid for the tickets. And, you know, that's a kind of infamous behaviour that's not good for any club. But or the time the guy, another guy, Josh, I'll probably just reveal who he is, but Josh, he'd collected, and it was about 500 quid, but he had still 50, because we do a T-shirt every year for the Tommy Burns Supper. And he said, I'll take these home, and he got the bus home, the Edinburgh bus, and he left them in bus, never getting back either. It's just we've had a few, God knows how many flags we've lost over the years, club flags. I don't want anybody to think we're some sort of well-oiled machine, Andrew, the supporters club.
Oh, look, I think you're making sure that that's the case. Because I get sacked from the ticket convener, Lark Hall Celtic Sports Club, because I lost. I did the same thing, a Rangers game.
Did you?
It was wrapped up in an elastic band. I was running to the jungle, and it was like, it bounced out the back of my pocket, you know, like, so whoops. That was about 600 quid. But my brother was treasurer. Thankfully, my brother was treasurer. So he cooked the books before the AGM. So, so we could make it. Well, it's, how many years ago, man? We're old. We're old, Paul. We're old.
Cut, but don't say that. Well, there's our shared, can we use the word heritage of Celtic supporters? But when I was a teenager, that was the bus I was on, Black Hall Celtic Supporters Club.
So I thought I recognised you.
Yeah, Paul and Raymond, my mum's was born in Lark Hall. So I'm from Hamilton, of course, but you remember it used to come stop outside the Palace Grounds?
It did, I was stopped at Hamilton. Pat Whelan and all that, you know?
Used to get
that a lot, you know? Wow, it's still going. My sister goes. Yeah, because she gets on at Hamilton.
Yeah.
She lives near the Bottom Cross. I think it's had a split and all that. You get a lot of these kind of buses, like there's a bit of kind of argy-bargy and people break off. But I think they've come together once people get older, isn't it? Everybody, you make your accommodation with people in life, don't you, when you get older?
Aye, exactly. And you've seen that in Edinburgh over the years. We've been lucky. I mean, it's interesting that nobody's ever picked this up before, but it's funny in Edinburgh over the years that the Huns, you know, like you say, the Huns in this, the Paris Buns,
the rest of them all do it all the time.
Right. And I'll tell you in a minute about when we get Rangers banned for the universities. That's still probably even more of a talismanic feature than the Tommy Byrne Supper. But over the years, they've had one club, they're pretty infamous, they're called the Union Jack Bus. And they've ran for years, as long as I've been a student, when I was a student, I went there, that bus existed. But that's all they've ever had, you know, in the city. Meanwhile, Edinburgh, we are friends as a supporters club with so many clubs in Edinburgh, a lot of whom have been around longer than us. Edinburgh Number One, the Gilmerton Bus, Leith Bus, which is the Leith Bus now runs the away buses. So most of the clubs in Edinburgh, the members go, just because of the lack of tickets these days, you know how it works. We use the Leith Bus and stuff for all these clubs. So we all know each other. They go to each other's dues and stuff, and it's a nice scene that we're all still involved. But ironically, the Huns have just never really had that, so they've just had the one rather infamous bus, you know, a bunch of barns, basically.
It's strange as well, because when you think about Edinburgh, I suppose Edinburgh, the diaspora, and you think of Leith, and you think of the Irish Catholics looking in that. There's hope to Yogi about it and all that in the past, Yogi Hughes and everything, you know, so obviously there's that core, there's that hardcore for the Celtic, but you think about Edinburgh establishment and Murray and Murray's companies, and you'd think there would be a kind of fertile ground for a kind of Rangers.
That's a good question. I don't know. You'd probably think about Hearts and Hibs there and just how they fit into this. I mean, Hibs, interestingly, if this hasn't been discussed before, Andrew, with you guys, it's interesting, Hibs, very recently, there's a core of their supporters that have reclaimed the Irish. You know that phrase? I don't like soup takers, that a lot of Celtic supporters, I think, are a bit disdainful about Hibs, because they are. I mean, when I was young, when I was really running the club in the very young days, I knew a lot of Hibs supporters and we were first to wear the green, and that was good banter with them, but it's true.
You stole our players.
Yeah, then they can line off all those grievances, can't they, you know?
Yeah, but they've been around.
Aye, you know, but I think that Hearts, on the other hand, have remained pretty staunch, you know, and maybe that's something to do with it. But Irishness in Scotland is... it's very different from if you're of that unionist indigenous stock, you know. It's very different from the way Hibs, Hearts, and remember before we Dundee and stuff, all the Irish communities. So I don't know the answer as to why that's the case. I would say, however, what was interesting leading up this year to the shitstorm we've just gone through, but in those weeks leading up to that remarkable run we had when things were really bad, and the way home in the bus. And this says a lot, actually, about Celtic supporters, wherever you're based. But, you know, we've got a lot of members of the club who were born and brought up in Edinburgh or the East. And we did wee polls in the bus on the way back. Right, who do you want? When it got to the point, remember, there was points, wasn't there, during this run early on when none of us thought we were going to win the league. You know, it would have meant something else. And it really was the wisdom of the orthodoxy. It's going to be Hearts or Rangers, Hearts or the Huns, you know. And in other words, if you asked, who do you want to win the league? People like me, it was very clear, we can't have the Huns winning the league. It's just wrong. But see, Edinburgh-based Celtic supporters, they've got a very different answer. Edinburgh brought up Celtic supporters.
Of course.
They wanted Hearts to win the league. They wanted Rangers to win the league. And you'd be sitting going, what? And it's remarkable. And it's because they were brought up amongst, it's just a different setup in Edinburgh. You know, that. And yet, I don't know, I just find that anathema, the whole idea of, oh no, we're the Huns winning the league. Because we can't have Hearts winning the league. Oh no, wait a wee minute.
I quite like it, but in its own way. I like its kind of local flavour. It's like it really sinks it in the locality, doesn't it? That people would
really
think that.
Does. Aye, it does. You know, so I mean, the other thing through here, you'll get your churches and stuff, Celtic and Hibs supporters. It's just big mixes, you know. And it's I think. I mean, my son's involved in the committee in the club now, and he's great. He lives in Leith. He said, I need to watch myself here. I'm not exposing myself. He just says, you know, no matter how, he said, if you wake up in the morning, you're hungover, you've got a sore head, and then turns out the kettle's broken down, and you've no bread for toast, and you're going, oh God, can this day get any worse? And then you look out and it's pissing with rain, you're going, oh bloody hell, oh my God, when are you getting that now? And then you get, and then the bus is late, and you're going, Jesus. Eventually, when you stop and think, that's been a terrible day, I've just had, you always remind yourself of one thing, at least I'm not a Hibs supporter. No, I'm very fond of our Hibernian cousins. And let's be honest, when they won that Scottish Cup, it's amazing just what every Celtic supporter remembers that day when Hibs won the Scottish Cup, because we were all, well, certainly in the East, we were loving all that. Just the same as this time when we won the league, just there. The bus left in the morning, full bus with 55 on the bus. We leave from the centre of Edinburgh, Andrew Dropkick Murphy's, you know, in the very grass market area. But then we have to drive through the west of the city, you know. So you're going to pass through Slateford, you know, basically right next to Tynecastle. And the streets were just awash with jambos, you know, because remember, we were leaving at, what, I think it was at 9:30 we left in the morning, so we can get through and get a pint before the game started for the early kickoff. And we're going through, and the bus conveyor, our guy, Matt, at the moment, you know, he was insistent, we're not putting our flags up until we leave Edinburgh. He goes, because we'll get our windies panned. And sure enough, all the way down the ground, it was just awash with jambos, all utterly expectant and all the rest of it. But the minute we got to the roundabout at Heriot Watt at Riccarton, flags up, you know. There'll be guys watching this going, you're a shower of cowards, you know. But we're saying, we'd rather get to the game than have all the windies done, you know. But sure enough, we get to the game and the rest is history. But on the way home, the same guy, let's just say, drinks had been taken, and you know what happens when drinks have been taken? Your inhibitions lower a bit.
Dutch courage, as they call it.
And it was me, one of the older guys, I'm not the oldest, but one of the older guys, I think we should take our flags down here, boys, because it was the same route back. Thankfully, the traffic lights were all at green, or we would have been, you know, you're driving, and they were all still out in the streets, all the jambos, and they were devastated. They'd be utterly devastated. The last thing they'd want to see is a Celtic supporters bus come through, and all the young team in our bus all thumping the windies, and I'm going, for God's sake, we're going to. So I'm very happy to admit I was a boring one that day, but we got through okay without. And then we all went down to Leith that night, actually, for the Hibs supporters, and they were just, you know, they were more, they were even happier than us. I mean, and that says it all about the city. So that was a long, long, we went away off in a meander there when you asked about Edinburgh.
Because obviously I understand that, like about the flags and all that, because obviously if you're on the Lark Hall Celtic Sports bus, we had to go different ways and all that, because we wouldn't even need to have flags. People would see the scarves. We get the windows panned in a couple of times. Remember my dad gave me this brand new, really kind of ski jacket, and it was a really cold night, we're East End Park, and then they smashed their windows, and the guy hit the guy, the glass all hit the guy in front of me. So my dad, I'm sorry, your new jacket's done for, because there was blood splattered all over the front of it, you know. And it was my dad had only bought it a week before. Sorry, da, like, because it's dead hard to get blood out of, got blood out of stone. It's like dead hard to get blood out of a jacket.
A handy thing to have, right? Enough a blood splattered jacket, you know, if you ever want to sort of swagger about and make a name for yourself. Oh, sorry.
Oddly, it was blue. Oddly, it was blue. So then it was red, and there was a bit of white in the zip. So it was red, white, and blue. Maybe that's why the guy was smashing the window to get the blood over it, so that it would really be fitting in Lark Hall.
I admire your bravery, Andrew, but Lark Hall. I've got fond memories of Lark Hall roots there and stuff still, you know.
Yeah, and you guys, you banned Rangers from the Heriot Water. Was it Heriot Water or Edinburgh?
Both. No, we didn't do it by half. It was I'd mentioned this guy's David Duncan. He was the main Edinburgh University man. David was he did various jobs over the years, but it was again hatched in a pub one night when we were talking, and that's when, you know, the injustice of what the Huns had done with their signing policy all those years. So it was 1986, same year as the Supper Act, when we started Supper. David was a full time union. You know, student politics, you can be elected to run the student union. I did that as well, funnily enough, at Heriot Water for a couple of years when I graduated. But Davey was the treasurer of Edinburgh Uni Students Association. I think he was sort of second year of uni or something. So he went first, we proposed a motion basically to get Rangers to ban them, to be allowed to start a supporters club, to ban them any sale of merchandise, basically just to not have any presence in the unit. And it was because of the in our view, and most people's view, anti-Catholic signing policy. But we were quite clever about it, because we didn't put our name to the policy. So Davey was also a big high hegemon in the Labour Club at the university. So we actually got the Labour Club, the SNP Club, the Anti-Racist Society, the Liberals, the anti-apartheid group, and they all co-sponsored the motion, so her name wasn't the owner. And they took it to the annual general meeting of the Students Association. And now that sounds as if I'm gilding the lily a bit here, but genuinely was reported back to us that it was the biggest turnout at a general meeting that they had since the Vietnam War, like some for 18 years. Aye, it was mobbed. We weren't allowed. I wasn't there because I'm no Edinburgh Uni. And it was passed entirely. And the only people to oppose it was there was a small group of sort of just Rangers supporters and the Conservative Society, who argued that it was discriminatory and stuff. But it was passed overwhelmingly. So the Heriot Walk was a bit of a tougher proposition, just because it's a very different makeup. You know, the demographics are very different. A big six counties. Unionist presence at Edinburgh, nationalist presence as well. So it was tougher there, but I led that one. And we got that passed as well. But we came up against a lot more opposition. Me personally, I got a lot of real, huge amount of abuse for that. You know. But we got it passed there. So yeah, both unis, it was banned. Eventually, when I became a student president after I graduated, Morris Johnson did sign for Rangers. I was in my office one day and I had a PA, you know, my own PA, this wee wanky student.
Fancy.
Left wing firebrand with his own assistant. And Margaret, bless her, Paul, there's a phone call here for the Daily Record. And it was like a Friday afternoon, I can remember it well. Because Morris, I think Lojo signed, I think it was a follow me. He signed on a Friday, didn't he? The story broke.
The story broke on a Friday.
At the press conference. So it was like the following Friday. And obviously this story was huge, wasn't it? You know, the Daily Record were obviously looking for something. Somebody somewhere goes, wait a minute, are Rangers not banned from the two universities? Yeah, that's the Daily Record on the phone. And I remember the guy's name, but I better not say, because he did the dirty on us a couple of times as a result of this, which is another, God, there's loads of these stories. We had a few flirtations. I'd rather not this guy. I'll maybe tell you separately, but he's a bastard, to be honest. But anyway, hi, Paul. I believe you're the president of the Heriot Water Students Association. Aye. But I also believe you're associated with the Celtic Supporters Club. And I went, aye, that's right. And I could know where he was going to come from. But sure enough, he said, yeah, but now that, of course, Rangers have signed Morris Johnson, I believe that Rangers are banned from your university and from Edinburgh University? I said, I believe so. That was the guy that did it. Just, I believe so. Yeah, yeah, we're just wondering, I suppose we're wondering, you know, will you now, as a support, as a student association, remove the ban? You know, now that Rangers have signed a Catholic, I'm trying to come up with an answer in my head. I went, no, it's a very good question. And I almost said his name there. I said, but if the students at either university wish to overturn the ban, that's a decision for the students, not for me. Thank you. I put the phone down, going, you're beauty. You know, I wasn't going to say aye. And it's never been, as far as we're aware, it's never been overturned, and it's still the case. So, and they've never had a supporters club. You know, the uni, there's been hip supporters clubs at the unis. There's been an Aberdeen club at Heriot-Watt, but never Rangers, you know. So, yeah, that was our, we were very,
what a legacy.
Very proud of it.
What a legacy, Paul. What a legacy.
What a legacy of hatred and yeah. And
fighting for what's and, right. Fighting for what's right. That's what we'll call it.
Oh, aye. Worth every minute. It was great fun. Bless him. David passed away a couple of years now, and that was David's legacy. A great guy, David Duncan. Did a lot for us over the years, you know.
Yeah, it must be. And what do people? What's your status within the club? Are you the old kind of wiseacre in the sense of somebody who's been through it all?
You go to the first letter right there. Wise, and then R W. I'm the old W something R in the club. Aye, but oh no, I don't. Yes and no, but I don't want to do that. I'm doing this. I will tell you, when you asked me to do this, Andrew, and I said, shall we do, can we do a couple of years rather than just me being the talking head? And you said, aye, if you want, Paul. But sure enough, I went to the committee and they were like, that old phrase, but like, snow off. I don't know, date that. And I couldn't find anybody else to date with me, you know. And it's, but to be fair, it's because I'm the only guy that, I mean, I started it and I'm still here, you know, but I don't, they do a great job without me, and they're very happy. We've got a WhatsApp chat and everything. Everyone's very happy that we're doing this. It's good for a supporters club. If there's new students who are thinking of coming to uni next year, any chance you get to tell them that there's a club is good, isn't it? You know, because they'll come and join us. So yeah, that's good to be. It's great to be associated with it, but no, I don't. I've done my bit. You know, I like to just be on the bus and enjoying the crack.
Yeah, and you obviously you moved from deepest darkest Lanarkshire to live in Edinburgh, and that became your home.
I was there when I was 16. I'm now down in the coast here through the east in Dunbar. I mean, you'll know, being from the same deepest, the darkest and deepest part of Lanarkshire that we're from, there's that great phrase that I still like reminding people of. Like, I mean, I was the first guy in my unit to go to the family, like a lot of people of our background, Andrew, you know.
Likewise.
You'll be saying that. You know, it was a huge thing, wasn't it? And we should be very pleased at that time. Great these days, but with student grants, didn't we?
We did.
You know, we had all that stuff. I mean, I was lucky enough. There's this very peculiarly Scottish thing, isn't there? You can go to university after fifth year. So, I mean, I was only 16 and a half when I went to uni.
My cousin Claire was the same. Aye, she did. So yeah, you, I got the games know. With and really close to.
Aye.
Yeah,
and people say to me, do you think that's a good thing? Would you recommend people go at that age? And I would say to them, you, because for every one of me at that age, there would be somebody else that it was just too much, because it was a huge culture shock for me. You know, my background, living in Edelwood and Hamilton, your council scheme to go there. And I was so naive, you know, I didn't know there was fee-paying schools. I genuinely didn't. All of a sudden, I'm in this class at Edinburgh College of Uptown Planning I did, surrounded by a lot of English people who are 19, 20, you know. It's a very different system down there, you know, and they tend to, and a lot of them will do their gap years. I didn't even know what a gap year was, you know, just all that carry on. And I came here, but there's a great phrase, and I like to say that my mum and dad, they were so proud that I would have been accepted for Heriot-Watt. And they said, aye, your Paul, that's him going through to Edinburgh. I think it's the best phrase.
Yeah.
As if there's a curtain or something at Hart Hill that you go through, and all of a sudden you're in a different, and it's sort of true. You know, I should tell you, we do the Stagger to Paradise, Andrew, which you may have heard of, but we've done these couple now, a sponsored walk for Edinburgh to Glasgow, to Celtic Park, and we need to walk through Hart Hill, the club. But the last time we did it, there was 20 of us did it, you know, so you do it over a day and a half, and you arrive at Celtic Park, and we did the parade around the pitch and all this carry on, we're waving at everybody. We raised 15 grand doing that for a refugee charity in Edinburgh and a food bank in Edinburgh. We're very pleased with that. But going through Hart Hill was quite an experience. But aye, going through to Edinburgh.
You know, I went out with a really posh lassie from Bath, going to a really lovely, amazing person. I really liked her. But she used to get obsessed. She'd come to Glasgow Uni, you know what? And she'd been at a really top-notch fee-paying school in England. She used to say, "Why, when yous are going home, why do yous always say, 'I'm away up the road'?" She says, why is it always up the road? It's like, you know, I could be going down a hill, you know, like my house could have been down a hill at the top of the hill. I'm away up the road. She says, why is that, you know? And I do say it. And I do say going through to Edinburgh. I'm going through to Edinburgh today. I was through to Edinburgh yesterday. I'm going through to Edinburgh, you know.
Aye. My nickname in the first couple of years at uni was By the Way. You know, the English students could have, and I said, By the Way. It's a real Lanarkshire thing I need to get in early, by the way. You're going to stop saying by the way. So I was called that. That affected me. Everybody talks, you know, it was like, but when I became president, and this is not to do with the club, when I became president of the uni, one of the first things I had to do, you'll probably know use this, but I'll tell you anyway. One of the things you do when you're president of the student union is you meet all the new students, you know, and you get them in these, the big lecture theatre, and I was with my accent and stuff. And, I mean, I was 21 then, but with all these students, and it started off, you had the chancellor of the university spoke, and then you had the vice chancellor, and then it was the president of the student union. So I remember the big thing I wanted to say to him was, you know, please make sure you use the student union or association and everything. But there was all these blank faces, half of them could hardly understand me anyway. And I said, now, if there's, and I've spoken for a few bits, so we worked in a good night. If there's one thing I can leave you all with, please use your union. Hey, you don't use you.
And you
And even the chancellor's going, use
your union, aye.
Use your union. You know, it's what you're talking about, you know. But aye, so there you go. That was you take the boy out of Lanarkshire. But it's great. And the one thing I would say about the club is that we're very fortunate that because the universities and international institutions, we've had so many nationalities over the years. Nigerians.
Yeah, that's
Cambridge,
a vibrant. That's Cubs. A real vibrant.
Very lucky in it. And that really adds to it. Anybody should be pleased about that. That Celtic, the name is just, you know, you get these guys and their connection with football is that they might know football in their own country, but they come here and it's Celtic they want to know about. Just that's great. So, yeah, over the years we've had, never mind just Scotland, England, Ireland, Wales, but all over, French, you name it. We've had them, Germans, Swedes, you know, guys joining the club, and it's great.
And brilliant. And Hamilton, yeah. Deepest, darkest Hamilton, you know, that's the real Wales. Yeah, right. You don't get through to Hamilton.
Yeah.
You don't go away from Hamilton. Well, thanks so much, Paul. Look, it's been brilliant to have you on. It's been brilliant to have you on. Thanks a million.
A pleasure, Andrew.
God bless you.
All the best. Thanks, Andrew. Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to theCelticUnderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.